The book is about a gentleman who gives his rendition of the steps when he had 7 years, and then he gives a rendition when he had 14 years, and then when he had 21 years, because as you deal with these steps, your impression and your perception of the steps and how they work sort of change. So I want to, step seven is actually one of my favorite steps to talk about. First of all, it deals with humility. You know, I always say I was going to give my talk on humility, but I never do it with a group this small. But so I'm going to talk a little bit about humility, which is great because I know absolutely nothing about it. But I'm an alcoholic, so I'm used to talking about shit I know nothing about. So I'm going to do that deal. And so we're going to have, really, when you think about it, this is what it says. This is what the 12 and 12 says on step seven. It says, since this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and the practice of it can mean, and what the practice of it can mean to us. Indeed, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of A's 12 steps. For without some degree of humility, no alcohol can stay sober at all, and nearly all A's have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, they're talking about physical sobriety, they still haven't much chance of becoming truly happy. Without it, they cannot live much to much useful purpose or in adversity to be able to summon the faith that can meet any emergency. The attainment of greater humility. I mean, I got to sit here and talk about the attainment of greater humility. I mean, can you imagine that in an alcoholic? Today, my talk will be on how I attained humility. I mean, who's going to talk about that? Who's going to announce that they're going to talk about it? I mean, I got to talk. But if you're going to talk about step seven, that's what you got to talk about, right? So how do you talk about... Now, here's my problem. How do you talk about humility when you don't have it? Because I don't have it, I'm like a poor example, So I'm just going to tell you my experience. See, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to tell you my experience with this deal. And I'm going to try to be as truthful and as plain as possible. And it's not like I have humility or anything. I'm not holding myself as having humility, but I'll tell my... I've been around here 30 years. So here's my guess. My guess is I don't have it. I don't really know much about what it is. Or maybe how to get it, but since I've been around for 30 years and I'm fairly happy, maybe there's a possibility that I had it once in a while I was here and I didn't know about it. You know what I mean? And so even though I know I'm not humble, okay, and that I'm basically arrogant, maybe I'll tell you my story and my situation, how I feel, and maybe somebody will come up to me after the meeting and say, you know, Russell, let me tell you where you're making a mistake. This is where you... And you'll explain it to me. So that's the way I'm going to do this thing, okay? I want to read something to you. This is from a story that, you ever meet somebody in AA that you sort of like listen? You know, we're a program of attraction, right, rather than promotion. Is that what it says? Which means is you come in here and you meet people, and some people you're attracted to and some people you don't want to hang around. But there's no real mathematical formula for attraction. You either like somebody or you don't. You either see something and you say, this is real, this is genuine, or this is phony baloney bullshit. You know, one thing about alcoholics that I believe is to be true, I think alcoholics who essentially are full of shit, I'm full of shit. I mean, we're liars, I mean, I'm not talking about you guys because I can tell you are alcoholics of an ilk that are a cut above. you are clearly, Mike is here from Laguna Beach, clearly an alcoholic with integrity. You know what I mean? I can tell you guys are a little bit, sharper than most alcoholics, but most alcoholics, the guys in my group, the car room, are pretty much liars and cheaters and thieves, and you know, even though they don't think so. Isn't that the book says? With self will run riot, though we usually don't think so. And we see the world not the way it is, but the way we are. We're all self... What does it say? We're selfish, self-centered, deluded, and all that sort of stuff. So, that's the deal. But we do meet people in here. Don't you think this is right? Don't you meet people? Some of you guys have been here for 10 years, 20 years, 15 years, a year, 2 years. You do meet here people in here that are fairly attractive. They do have something where you say there's something about that guy. And if you're a bar drinker like I was, and if you're an alcoholic like I am, If there's one thing you know how to do, it's you know how to bullshit, lie, and make excuses. You know, I don't call it bullshitting, lying, make excuses. You know, I mean, to me, I'm like the most honest guy in the world. But if you're an alcoholic, you don't get here. I remember once telling my sponsor, I didn't want to hold hands during Lord's Prayer because I wasn't sure why I believe in God. And he said, and I said to him, I said, I don't want to be a hypocrite. And he said, too late. He said, too late. He said, if you're an alcoholic, did you know this? You pass through hypocrite like on the way. You leave hypocrite in the dust. Because hypocrite has to do with saying one thing and doing another. If you're an alcoholic, you live your life doing that crap, saying I'm sorry and apologizing and making excuses. So, but you come in here, and the interesting thing is, as crazy as we are when we come in here, hopefully you get to rub elbows with and talk with guys that who are alcoholic like you, but there's like something different about them. And if you're lucky, you're actually attracted to those kind of people. Let's call them like healthy people, sober, emotionally sober people. And you're not quite sure what they got, you know, but they got something you don't have, you know that. And one of the, sometimes I'll read a story in the book, and I'll read, and you know, these stories are written by people. It's their story. This isn't like fiction. This is like nonfiction. And I'll read a story in the book. You know the great thing about putting things down and writing? Like this guy, if I'm going to read this, when I read this, this is his words. He might as well like be here tonight. This was a live human being. This is his story. This is what he would be saying. And it says something, and you listen to it, and this is what happens when I listen to this story. And I've read it over and over again. I said, boy, I wish I could be like him. I wish I could hang out with him. You know, our big book says, at the end, it says, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Now, you know, here's my suggestion. It's just a little suggestion. Let's say that somewhere in AA, there's some humble people. I mean, not me. You understand what I mean? I don't want anybody to think, you know, Russell's saying he's humble. I'm not the guy. But let's say there are some humble. Has anybody ever met anybody in AA that they think might be humble? You know what I mean? So let's say you've met somebody who you think might. So let's say there's like a humble people in AA. And let's say there are stark raving, egotistical, arrogant jagoffs in AA, which there probably are. It might be the same people. I don't know. The humble people. Depending upon what day of the week it is. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not saying they're. But let's say you're in here and you start developing a life and an attraction for certain people. So you hang out with them all the time. I'm not talking about like doing the steps or anything. I'm not talking about anything. I'm not talking about rocket science here. But let's say you just sort of come in here. Instead of sitting in the back of the room, maybe you do that for a while. But after about a year or two, you find yourself hanging around with certain older members of Alcoholics Anonymous like all the time. Without knowing why. You just like them. You like the way they talk. You like the way you feel after you leave. You like, you know, everything that happens. And let's say, and of course, it has something to do with humility, because we wouldn't know humility if it hit us over the head. You understand what I'm saying? But let's say, you know, maybe years down the road, we find out that actually they were humble. You know, I'm going to say we knew that because we don't know what humble looks like. You know, we have all sorts of strange idea of humble. But let's say we found that they were humble. Let's say we developed a relationship with people and we hung up with people and we became attracted to people that had this quality. You know, I'm thinking that there's a possibility if we like, you know, alcoholics are sort of strange birds. We sort of copy people. We like mimic people. Like, I'm in a bar. Listen, let me tell you the way I operate it. I'm an alcoholic. I love drinking. But if you put me in a place where they're snorting cocaine, I'm snorting cocaine. If you put me in a place where they're smoking dope, I'm smoking dope. If you put me in Manhattan and they're drinking Manhattans, I'm drinking Manhattan. If you put me in Key West, they're drinking margaritas, I'm drinking margaritas. If I'm in a country western bar, I'm drinking beer. I'm going to be doing whatever the other person does, you know, in order to fit in. And that same thing that almost like to kill me out on the street actually sort of saved my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was fortunate enough and blessed enough to apparently hang out with certain people that really took this deal seriously and felt a certain way. And I wanted to be like them. And without looking at this thing like a college course, like some of us do, I'm going to learn this thing, I'm going to get real smart, by hanging out with men like Joe Snyder, like Bob Sullivan, you know, like some of the guys that I hung out with, I found myself, maybe without knowing it, talking like they talked, acting like they acted, reacting the way they react. I mean, I just started learning by watching them. This is how Bob would do it, and by being corrected sometimes. You know what I mean? And you know, so and over a period of time, hanging around with these people. So one of the people, and I'm going to read this because I read this all the time, and I read this at different meetings. It's a story in the book called "He Sold Himself Short." It's the last three or four paragraphs. I just want to read it to you. And it's not only his story. It's sort of like the story of every old-timer I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's got like an ingredient. You know, when I sit down, my sponsor's here, John Glenn. My sponsor's, I'm going to talk a little bit about my sponsor. I've had three sponsors. And I don't say this to embarrass him, but I've had three sponsors. And first one was Bob Sullivan, and he's dead. He passed away of cancer. And, you know, people ask me, will you be my temporary sponsor? I said, I don't know how to make it permanent. I don't know how to nail that sucker to the wall. You know what I mean? Because my first sponsor died when he had 15 years sobriety. And then my second sponsor, Joseph Steiner, died when he had 37 years. And they were all sort of different, but they were all the same. They all had similar qualities. You know, I sort of think all old-timers that I'm attracted to have certain similar qualities. They may look different. They may act different. They may focus on it. But there's a quality they have that they've developed, which is probably why they have many, many years, and they're happy in their sobriety. You know what the big book says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. If true happiness, he'll find none at all. And in here it says, unless you become humble and even more humble, you're never going to find happiness. So all this must have something to do, you know, with humility. You know, in other words, here's the weird thing. I may not know what humility is. What the definition is, and I've looked it up. You know, there's many definitions. One of the definitions of humility is a person is humble, doesn't feel he has to prove anything to anybody. Another definition is to be truly humble is to know who and what you are, to have a true understanding of who and what you are. But there's probably a million different definitions. I'm not even sure how you apply it. You know, but here's what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is if it's true that in order to be happy. And so, not only sober, but happy and sober, and have contented sobriety, you have to have more humility. You have to have humility. Then no matter what I think it is, if I find somebody with long-term contented sobriety, there's probably a chance that he's humble or he's got this quality, whether I understand what it is or not. Does that make any sense? And I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough and blessed enough to hang out with people and to associate with people that they may not be humble, they may be crazy, but they seem to have that deal going on. They seem to have that deal going on in their life. So I may not be able to define it or see it, and I may not say, well, John is humble or this guy is humble. So I want to tell you a little bit about, you know, and so these guys, you know, had this quality about them, you know. I met John when I started going to Bible study at 15 years, when I was 15 years sober. And John was, he's got 56 years. He's been married for like 56 years or something like that. And there's a lot of things about John that I'm not going to tell you that are really, I think is really amazing. See, to me, he's a very humble person. He's a wonderful person. I mean, I'm sorry, John, to say this about you. You know I don't talk much about how he's a wonderful person, but he doesn't say much, you know, but when he talks, I listen to what he has to say. He's a Baptist preacher, and he spent about 20 years working with going to jails in Detroit, and then he moved down here to retire, 20, 30 years, and he went crazy, sort of retired, so then he ran into me at a Bible study. Can you believe that? At a Bible study. That's where we ran into each other, and he started going around to AA with me, and then he started going back, and every day. How old are you? 83? How old are you?
83.
83. Every day he goes down to the Dade County Pretrial Detention Center handing out these leaflets, you know, these tracts to the prisoners. That's what he does. And every Sunday he goes down and feeds the homeless. And he's not bragging on himself. I'm bragging on you. And every Thursday he goes down to Agape and he does a Bible study with the women down there, homeless women and their children. It is a lot of other things that I'm not even going to go into. He would never tell you about this. He'd never mention it. And I know things about his life and stuff like that. And he's the kind of people I like hanging around him, you know. But I want to read this. This is from He Sold Himself Short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. I've gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that have come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. I love reading that. I love hanging out. I want to say I wish I could hang out. He says some of us shall meet in the fellowship of the Spirit. I wish I could hang out with him. But you know, here's the deal. Here's what you need to understand. I've been hanging out with guys like him ever since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been hanging out with guys like this ever since the first day I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never left these guys. I've never belonged to a fellowship that isn't surrounded by these guys. I find these guys all over the place, and I stick to them, and I hang out with them. I mean, I'm not one of these guys, but I find these guys, and I hang with these guys. Let me tell you who these guys are. These are guys who believe, sincerely, that the greatest thing that could ever happen to them, this is what this man says, is that they have received the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted them from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where they've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and serving them as they can. You know, there are people in AA that absolutely believe that is the greatest thing that you can attain in the life. Do you know there are people in this fellowship that believe that? Now, I'm going to tell you something else. There are people in this fellowship that laugh at that, that think that that's stupid. Or even if they don't think it's stupid, and they won't say it's stupid, they won't in any way live their life or populate their life or act in any way that would indicate to you that that kind of stuff is important. Next, you can go out on the street. You go out into the world. You bump into your neighbor, whoever you're hanging out with, and you read that line to him and say, is that the most important thing? What do you think of a guy like that? How many people do you think there are in this world that their entire life is... How many people... I mean, seriously, if you want to talk about people and who they are and what they are, you know, and what's important, what's not... I mean, there are people in this world that have a lot of money, aren't there? Nothing wrong with money. People that have a lot of money, people that have a lot of things, you know, guys that have a lot of girls, you know, people that have nice cars, you know, you look at the movies, there's all sorts of things to focus on in this world. You can go to the movies, there's all sorts of stuff we focus on, you know. There are guys that are interested in politics. How many people do you think truly are focused on that deal? You know, here's what I think. I think I may be wrong about this. I may not be right. I don't think there's a lot. I think it's a small amount of people that focus on that deal. There may be a lot of people that want to stay sober. There may be a lot of people that want to have recovery. There may be a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, in Narcotics Anonymous. But I don't think there's a lot of people that focus on that deal, that read that paragraph over and over again, that look for people that, you know, that are into that deal, that are focusing on that deal. Now, here's what I think, and I may be wrong. This is just my impression. This is what I think. I've been sober for a while. You know, I think I have, I don't know, whether some credibility or something, 30 years have to mean something. Here's what I think. I think that the quality that I'm attracted to in that statement has something to do with humility. I think that's what I'm attracted to. I don't think it has to do with brains. I don't think it has to do with maybe even integrity or honesty. I don't think it has to do with good looks or money. I don't think it has to do with that. I think what that thing that attracts me to that man has something to do with the word humility. And I think that people that develop that deal in their lives, no matter what they look like or what they sound like, whether they're talkers like me or quiet, that develop that deal, I think that those people have latched on to something. I don't know how you get there. I was never like that. I mean, I don't think I was there before. I don't know where you get to that deal. How you get that deal. But I think the 12 and 12 and what's happened to me in my sobriety gives me a certain understanding of certain things as far as this. I think now, this is sort of like experimentation thing. I may be wrong with this. I'm just sort of bouncing this off you. You know, with the caveat that, hey, I might be wrong. You know, you can go out and ignore all this stuff and say, well, he wasn't even sure himself. So one day, here's the deal. One day I'm on the phone with my sponsor, and some of you have heard this story before. And I'm complaining about my wife. And I had about, 10 years sobriety. She had done something. You know how they are. She was talking or spending or something. She was doing something, I don't know, that I didn't like. And she was not following directions. She was not obeying. She obviously refused to obey and, for her own good. And so I was complaining about her. And after I was done for my 20-minute diatribe, you know how alcoholics are, repeating myself 15 times. He was probably the 8th person I told about it. He says to me the following, and you know, I had had this kind of thing say to me many times before. He said to me, this was Joe Snyder, he said, do you know why you're upset? Who knows what I said? She spent more money, she told me to shut up. Well, who knows? He said, do you know why you're upset? And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, do you know why you're upset? Has anybody ever been upset? I mean, I'm not the only one, right? Okay. I mean, you're alcoholics. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to be an alcoholic to be upset. Have you guys ever been to has anybody ever been to an AA meeting besides this one where they like, that, you know I talk throughout the hour here, but there are meetings where they go around the room and people talk. You ever been to a meeting where people actually talk around the room? So you know what the deal is. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're upset, right? I mean, that's what AA meetings are all about. You know, who's upset the most? You know what I mean? It's all about life pissing you off and bothering you, you know? And I mean, there's shit happening and it's not good, okay? So here's the deal. So I'm upset. And have you ever had anybody come up to you after you get pissed off at a meeting or talk about it and you've explained the whole thing? You've explained like an idiot could understand what you're saying. You know, the cop stops, he gave you a ticket, you know, you lost your job, they fired you for no reason. You ever have somebody come up to you and say, do you know why you're upset? Imagine this, they come up to you after you explain that your boss fired you for no reason whatsoever and you don't have enough money to make it to the end of the month and you've been working there for 20 years and he's a dry, and you've explained that to the group and you're very upset and you're scared, and then some punk comes up to you and says, well, do you know why you're upset? I mean, I want you to understand that deal. Don't you want to slap him? I mean, what kind of a question is that? I mean, at least do the alcoholic thing. You know, go up to the person and say, oh, I know how you feel. You're so right. You know what I mean? Oh, I had an asshole boss like that too. You know what I mean? Oh, somebody ought to do something. We ought to sue them, you know. Just gather around and have a giant pity party. But then all of a sudden some old fool comes in there and says, well, do you know why you're upset? And you want to, like, poke his eyes out. You know what I mean? What kind of a stupid question? Well, that's what my sponsor said to me after I clearly explained to him why anybody would be upset. He says to me, this guy with, like, 30 years says to me, he says, well, do you know why you're upset? So I say to him, what do you mean? He says, well, do you know why you're upset? I said, well, of course I know why I'm upset. And he says, why are you upset? And I said, I just told you for 20 minutes in detail, chapter and verse, why I was upset. She said this, and then he says to me this. He says, that's not why you're upset. I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, who knows me better than me? Who's smart about me better than me? But this is my sponsor. See, that's the problem with having a sponsor. See, this is why you should never get a sponsor. Because you never get a sponsor. Nobody can say shit like that to you. And you can always think forever the way you think right now. And you never have to think differently or be challenged. You can just, until they lower you in the grave, being miserable your entire life, you can just think the way you think. And get pissed off because other people don't think like you. And you never have some jerk off coming up to you says, well, and telling you that's not why you think. That's not why you're upset. So that's what he said, that's not why you're upset. And so I said to him, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. And then he shut up. He shut up. You see, these guys are monsters, really. Because, you know, if he told me why I was upset, I'd tell him to go screw himself. I didn't know what to say, But he just shut up, so he forced me, it's not my fault, to say to him, well, do you know why I'm upset? And then he said, do you really want to know? Now, what would you have said? What would you have said? I said, of course I want to know. At which point he said, listen, stupid. You see, this is important. I explain it to you this way, so maybe you'll understand why 20 years later, I remember it like it was yesterday. And it changed my life. And while it was going on, while I'm telling you this, while it was going on, I still didn't understand what the hell he was doing. See, that's how AA works. It's like this weird thing. It's like brainwashing, you know? I remember I said to my sponsor, I says, this is like brainwashing. He says, yeah, well, maybe your brain needs washing. They sort of change you, and they plant ideas in your mind. I mean, there's crap going on at this meeting, subliminally and otherwise. There's stuff floating across the room that you're not even hearing. You don't even understand, which 5 years from now will make sense to you. And I can't even explain how that works. But you're just going to have to work, and you're going to have to wait until life pounds you enough into submission so that your brain coincides with my ideas. See, I've had 30 years of living life and being pounded into submission, okay? So this stuff makes perfect sense to me and coincides with life, and it works with life perfectly. There are some people in here that the stuff is intriguing, it doesn't make any sense, but they just haven't been pounded enough. They're still fighting life. They're still tilting the windmills. They're still doing what they got to do in order to wrest satisfaction out of life because they know what'll really work. Another girl, some more money or stuff like that. They just got to get hurdled. The sandpaper of life just has to sand them down just a little bit more until they get into right thinking. And so he said to me this. He says, listen, stupid. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. You're upset because you're upsettable. Now I'm an alcoholic. Have you ever said anything like this to somebody? Well, if it happened to you, you'd be upset too. Well, if you didn't have, you'd be upset too. You ever say that? Because this is what you think. You think that if it happened to them, they would be upset. But what if you ran into somebody in AA who was dying of cancer and they weren't upset? Wouldn't that kind of blow your mind? What if you ran into somebody who lost their job in AA or whose son died? What if you ran into somebody in AA who came home one night from a Bible study and his son had blown his brains out with a gun, like my sponsor? What if you ran into men like that and they weren't mad and they weren't upset? What would you do with that? You'd be pretty intrigued with that stuff. You'd say, how does that happen? You know, I have this niggling little horseshit stuff that drives me crazy because I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless again, experience sense of ease and comfort, which comes about once by taking a few drinks. Because anything in this world that happens, whether it involves me or not, just blows the... is good for 15 AA meetings. But I've met men in here where stuff happens to them, major stuff, and it doesn't even... They're like even keeled. You know, it's like the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. Rich or poor, doesn't in jail, out of jail. Most of his letters in the New Testament were written while he was in a Roman jail. And they weren't as nice as some of the jails down here today, which are pretty crappy. So what if you ran into people in AA? I mean, when you pick a sponsor out, when you look at your sponsor and maybe has 10, 15, 20 years, isn't one of the things you notice about them is they're not as crazy as you? Hopefully you have a sponsor that's not as crazy as you. Isn't one of the things that you notice about it? Here's what you say. You latch on to somebody that seems to be even keeled and not up and down and sideways and everything. It's like an anchor you can latch on to, because whenever you see them, unlike my alcoholic mommy, you know, who is one day high and one day low and bipolar and try whatever and everything like that, you latch on to a person, a sponsor, who the one thing about them, as you can see, is they're stable. They're steady. And so one of the things you think, if you're an alcoholic, if somebody's steady, you say it's because they have no problems. But as you stick around to you, you find out that they have a lot of problems. They may have money problems, they may have health problems, they may have every kind of problem, but they're still steady. And that's one of the things that intrigues you about people, that you can trust them and you feel safe with them, because no matter what's going on in life, the circumstances are not the important thing. What's important is inside, they're steady, whether the life is, whether the bank account is high or whether their bank account is low. So my sponsor has this, so my concept of life as an alcoholic, my old ideas is that that who I am and what I am and how I feel has something to do, is tied up inextricably to my bank account, or to romance, or to whether I have relationships or a girlfriend or a boyfriend, or whether I I feel that, well, of course I'm depressed. Look at what's happening to me. How could I be otherwise? I honestly believe that I have no choice in the matter. I've got to be depressed. I've got to be angry. I have no choice in the matter. Because it's impossible for me to understand the paradigm that you could actually feel fantastic and be filled with joy, the joy of living. That's the 12th step, no matter what's going on, even if you're dying of cancer. That is like impossible for me unless I see it in front of me in people. And I believe, and this is just my belief after being around for a while, is that the ability to be undisturbed, to not be disturbable, has something to do with humility. You understand? It has something to do with humility. That people that have humility are unperturbable, undisturbable. That's one of the signs of humility. You're not that anybody's perfect or I'm perfect, but what you find is when you deal with these people that have this quality, whatever this quality is, they're not always flying off the handle or going crazy or going nuts. They're sort of like steady and they're undisturbable. And you know what I find out that's kind of interesting as this thing goes on in my life? I find out that there's stuff going on in my life today. You know, there's certain things that happen to you. When you're an alcoholic and you start following the rules and doing this stuff and not drinking, it is absolutely true that your life gets better circumstantially because you stop creating potholes. I mean, 90% of the stuff that was going on in my life, my circumstances that I was getting screwed up about, were things I was causing myself. I was my own worst enemy. And so when you stop drinking and you stop drugging and you stop doing crazy things and you stop acting crazy, a lot of stuff stops happening to you, okay? But listen, you know, and I know, we all know, that just because you stop drinking and drugging and doing crazy things, as they say, shit still happens, doesn't it? Doesn't stuff, as long as you're living in this world, hey, have you guys ever experienced traffic? Have you ever been late for a meeting and then all of a sudden there's an accident? I mean, crap, there's enough crap happening to you living in this life that you have nothing to do with, that you don't cause at all, that happens to you that can be upsettable. You understand? So I've had enough, I've had personal experience, for instance, just living with my wife. My wife's a lovely young lady. I love her. She really is. She's a lovely young lady. But I've lived with her for 30 years. You know what I mean? I've kept track. I've been keeping track. She said, are we going to be together in heaven? I said, honey, it's till death do us part. I'm out of here, you know. There's a limit. Don't be looking for me. Well, it's true. That's the promise. Death is adios. But in any event, No, but the point is, what I've noticed is the stuff that she does stuff and says stuff. She does stuff and says stuff around me and to me. And you know something? We have three girls, three daughters, and they're like clones. She's cloned herself. You know what I mean? So whatever she used to do and say that used to bother me, it's now to the power of four. You know what I mean? There's her and three others. You know what I mean? In harmony. You know, saying stuff. And what I've noticed is that most of the time, I don't even notice it. You know, I have these guys I sponsor. I love guys I sponsor, even with, especially guys who are married. I have this one guy, because I know what it's like to be a year sober, 2 years, 5 years sober, and you're married, and your wife's whatever it is. It's very difficult, you know. And they'll say to me things, my wife will say something, or my daughter will say something, and they'll say, they pick up on it, because if you're sober even a couple of years, you pick up on everything, you know what I mean? Because it's all about you, you know, even if they're, you know, she insulted my sponsor, you know. And they'll say to me, did you hear what your wife just said? And I'll say, no, what? I won't even hear it. It won't even get to the radar screen. You know what I mean? Things that used to drive me, things that I was saying, that's it, it's over. This marriage is over. You said what? It's over. You know, just one little thing. You know, I want to go to Chinese tonight. Forget it. That's it. I'm saying I can't handle it anymore. You know, it's always what you want to do. You know. Well, listen, you know, what I've noticed is that, you know, I'm not saying she hasn't changed. She's probably changed. But the stuff that used to drive me nuts, one of the things she used to do, we used to have fights all the time. She'd tell me what she was going to do. And we'd have terrible fights. She'd say things like, you know, we're struggling for money. Anybody ever have this? You're struggling for money. We need all the money we can get and all that stuff because we're going to die or something's going to, who knows what's going to happen. And my wife will come home, have hard days of work. She says, I'm quitting this job. And that's a three-hour fight. What do you mean you're quitting this job? I can't. You can't quit. I'm quitting. You know what she'd say? I'm quitting. You can't quit. I'm quitting. How are we going to eat? You know, that goes on like 3 days. I'm leaving you. This is over. We need you. Can't quit. We can't afford you. And everything like that. So now, even if I hear it, she says, I'm quitting. She doesn't work anymore. She's quit, actually. The only job she has is I pay her to be my office manager. It's actually protection money, not to come to the office. But what happened now? Now she says, she would say things like, I'm quitting. And I'd say, I think you should. If I say anything at all. Because I now know just because she says something, it doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. She's not saying I'm quitting. She's saying I'm upset. I'm saying, I understand. Have a nice day. You know, let's go get ice cream, you know? But where does that come from? I've learned to be content in all things. Where does that come from, that ability? So then, you know, you read this thing in the 12 and 12 on step seven. Yes, this is all about step seven because it's all about humility. You know, as alcoholics, when we first come in here, here's what we think, because we don't really believe in God. And even though the big book says, now this is what the big book says. This is straight out of the book. It says, one thing that we learned, and we are absolutely convinced of these three things. The first thing was convinced that we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives. Does it say that? Doesn't I read that? Did I read that before? We cannot manage our own lives, right? Which means, I think, I've done a study on this, that if we're alcoholics, we have to be absolutely convinced that we cannot manage our own lives. Do you understand what that means? No, you don't. I promise you, you don't understand what that means. I don't even understand what that means, but I think I understand a little bit better. Let me explain to you what that means. It means if you're an alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. You need to think about that for a second. It's not like you can manage parts of your life, or there's some parts of your life you can manage, or you can be a manager, or sometimes if you're an alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. Okay? Now, the reason why you have a problem, I know you have a problem with this, is because you walk out of this door, you get into your car, and then you drive away, and you spend the next 24 hours trying to figure out how to manage your life. When you're supposed to be convinced that you can't do it. No human power could restore you or relieve your alcoholism. There's no person that can do it for you. Only God could and would if you seek Him. That's a, listen, that's not me. That's not my opinion. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what are the implications of that? There is one who has all power. That one is God. Now, it's not even like you have 5% and he has like 95%. God, may you find him now. So here's the thing. As alcoholics thinking that way, here's what we think. We think in step 7. See, here's what people want me to say. You want me to tell you how to do step 7. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth. This is after 30 years. You can't do step 7. You can't do step 7. Truth is, you can't even do step 6. You can't do step 7. Step 7 is not something you do. Step 7 is done to you. You're going to have step 7 happen to you. That's why in step 6, they say, talk about trying things for a lifetime. Step 7 has to do with something that's going to happen to you. You're going to get to live this life in AA or outside of AA or wherever you're going to decide to live it, knowing these principles, reading this book, going to these meetings, and you're going to get to go through cancer. You're going to get to go through death of loved ones. You're going to get to go through firings. You're going to get to go through foreclosures. You're going to get through to go through. You're going to get to go through all the bullshit you're going through right now and more. It's going to happen to you. And you're not going to like it. It ain't going to be pretty. It's going to be 3 o'clock in the morning biting your nails. It's going to be fearful. It's going to be horrible. You're going to say, I can't believe what's happening to me. You're going to be running around trying to figure it out, and you ain't never going to figure it out. You're going to be running around trying to make it better, and you ain't never going to be able to make it better. You ain't never going to be able, you're going to be trying to protect yourself, and you ain't never going to be able to protect yourself. You're going to try to figure out how not to go broke, and you ain't never going to figure that out. You're going to have to figure out how not to get sick, and you ain't going to figure that out. And no matter how well you do things and how careful you are, one day you're going to walk out of the door and you're going to walk down and you're going to have 3 flat tires, or you're going to get into an accident and crap is going to happen to you, and it's going to happen to you. You've got 10 years for it to happen to you, and 20 years and 30 years, and it's all going to happen to you while you're working this AA program. You know? And you're either going to act and feel and believe the way you act and feel when you walked in the door the first day you were sober, and you're going to be upsettable, or it's not going to affect you at all. It's not even going to affect you at all. And that's going to have to do with how you deal with this stuff with life. While it's going to have to deal with something called suffering. You know, it's going to have to deal with something called suffering, which is why it says in the big book, for us, the process of getting a new perspective. You want to ask me why it doesn't bother me that much when my wife does this? And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this. You know, sometimes I have my moments. You know, I was sitting having dinner tonight, and Mike was there. And at one point in time, I thought we were going to be late. And I said to the guy, I raised my voice. I said, you know, we really got to get going. Mike said, hey, calm down. I said, you know, you're absolutely right. I'm going to talk about that tonight. You're absolutely right. I'm going to talk about that tonight. For us, the process of getting a new perspective was unbelievably painful. You know, you're trying to figure out how to do step 7, which has to do with more humility, has to do with a different perspective. Well, here it is right in the book. It says this is how you do it. For us, the process of getting a new perspective was unbelievably painful. This is about going through the car wash. I mean, some of you have heard about the car wash story. I'm not going to go into this. This is about going through life and taking the hits and going through and not falling off the wagon and looking at God and think of things as spiritually. All things work for good for those who love God, and to believe this stuff and keeping your faith and going through it, everything. It is only by, this is not me talking, it is only by repeated humiliations. So in order to do this step, you've got to be humiliated. You ready for this? Repeatedly. You guys want to do this step? Well, try to be, how many people have you ever been humiliated? See, I don't know anything about humility, but I know a lot about humiliation. I know a lot about arrogance. Get humiliated. You want to do step 7? Get humiliated. Put yourself in a position to be humiliated a lot of times. So you're pounded down and you don't worry about what you look like so much. That we were forced to learn something about humility. You don't learn this thing because you want to learn it. You learn it because you're forced to learn it. That's why people come into AA. Because they're forced to come into AA. They don't come into AA because they want to. Because they're humiliated. And they're forced on their knees to come into AA. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, is told and soon realized for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is the first step towards liberation from its paralyzing grip. So it is that we first see humility as a necessity, but there, this is the barest beginning. And how about this line here? Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems, avoiding pain and problems, making excuses, trying to get away from things, doing the Congressman Wiener thing, you know what I mean? I'm not putting him down, but that's a perfect example. Doing whatever you can to avoid the pain of humility. You know something? I'll tell you something. That's the kind of crap that you can turn you, that the kind of crap that happened to him, being humiliated publicly and everything, that's the kind of stuff you want to have happen to you. That's the kind of stuff that's going to happen to you. That's good shit. Or it's bad shit. Depending upon how you deal with it. You know? I mean, if you ever read the Bible, I'll tell you one thing you'll learn about the Bible. All the biblical heroes, they were crucifying them, cutting their heads off, killing them. And they lived happily ever after. A lot of humiliation hanging up there on the cross. Let me tell you something, naked. Wasn't all fun and games, you know? Wasn't all fun. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. And then it says, we learned the value of suffering. And I'm just going to end with this. In this one story, it's just sort of like a true thing. Take about a minute and then we'll end up and I'll give you an example, okay? And I can't give you, every one of you can tell me a story about crap that happened to you that was totally, you thought your life was over, it was terrible when it happened. You ran around, you went to your sponsor, you prayed, you did everything, it turned out good, it turned out bad, it doesn't matter, and somehow you got through it. And now it's just a story, and you can see that somehow it changed you as a result of that so that you're a better person. And you may be better because that kind of stuff just doesn't bother you anymore. Every one of you can tell me a story like that. And you wouldn't be able to tell me that story and you wouldn't have had that growth if you hadn't gone through that experience. And you would have done anything to avoid that experience. As a matter of fact, you spent hours, you'll spend hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars to learn how to act better and be better with a psychiatrist, you know, but for free, if you just get the shit pounded out of you, you'll change like that, you know what I mean? But you don't want to do that deal. You want a painless deal, you know? I was asked to do I'll give you an example. You know, I talk, you know, there's no, you can hear me talking, I talk all the time, I'm a talker, you know, I get paid for talking, I'm a paid bullshit artist, I'm a lawyer, you know, this is what I do. This is my talent, whatever it is. But the truth of the matter is, when I came to AA, and you guys can understand that this, I would watch guys that talk like this, because this is unscripted, I have no idea what I'm going to say before I get up there, and I would say, how do they do that? I can't do that. How could you get up in front of people and speak for an hour and, you know, be all, and I'm going to tell you something. I used to sit in the back of the room, you know, like, you know, most people who think they're humble because they don't talk, you know, judging people who do talk, say, oh, what an egomaniac he is. Oh, what a man. I'm back here, you know, on my throne of contempt, you know, looking at this egomaniac. He thinks he's a big man and everything. Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? You can't bullshit alcoholics. You can't get up here for 5 minutes if you're full of shit, and just talk and hold the attention of alcoholics for an hour, unless you're honest and you're straightforward with them and you're sincere. So if you ever want to learn a little bit something about humility and about ego deflation, what you need to do is you need to go up and you need to do an AA talk for about an hour. Next time you start judging people who talk, you need to come up here and do what I do for an hour and see how that deal feels. Most people won't even do it because they're too scared. So the bottom line is, here's the story. I'm sitting there, and I was asked to do the steps at the call room. You know, we may go over like a minute or so. Do the steps at the call room. And the gal tells me, do the steps at the call room. This was early on, I had 3 or 4 years. She says, you know, in the call room, when we do the steps, step series, you speak for the hour. There's none of this, you know, you speak for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, then you turn it over to the group crap. You speak for an hour if you do the steps here. We're here to listen to you. So I said, she says, can you? I said, well, yeah, I'll do that. Because I was told, when everybody asks, you always say yes. And I was willing to do that. So that whatever the night was, I went up, I think I was doing the third step, whatever step I was doing, and let's say it was step four or whatever, and I got up there, and the room was packed. I mean, it was packed like this, and it was an 8:30 meeting, and I had 3 or 4 years, and I was doing the steps, step four, and I just went crazy on step four. And I gave him everything I had. I gave him stuff I knew about step four, stuff I didn't know about step four. I gave him stuff on step four nobody has ever said before. And I gave him everything I knew about step four, and I looked up, and I was done, and I had another half an hour to go. And you know, like you're all looking at me? It was like I was supposed to speak from 8:30 to 9:30. It was 9 o'clock, and I said, blah, 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 blah. And I looked, and they're all sitting there waiting. Looking at me. Let me tell you something. You want to learn about the third step? You want to learn about turning it over? You want to learn about fear? You want to learn about trusting God? You need to be up there at 9 o'clock when you've just told them everything you know about every step that's ever been in the book. And they're all looking at you, and you got a half an hour to go. You want to learn about humility? You want to learn about humiliation? You want to learn about pain? You want to learn about fear? You know, you want to put yourself in that kind of position. So you can put yourself in a position to be scared and humiliated. And, you know, I sat there. I didn't have a clue as to what I was going to say. I just closed my eyes. Now, you see, what I could have said was, well, thanks a lot, I'm done, or whatever the heck. I don't know what I could have done, but what I did, and I don't even know where this came from, is I closed my eyes and I prayed. I said, God, please help me. You know, and all I know is open my eyes, I started talking. And next thing I know, it was 9:30 and I was finished. And, you know, everybody was clapping. Everybody said it was great. And my friend came up to me and he says, oh, that was great. We really appreciate it. And I said, well, what did you think about the part where I stopped? He says, what are you talking about? He said, well, where I stopped talking. He says, I thought you just, that was like a dramatic thing or something. You know? What I'm saying is that whether it's NAA, whether it's sponsoring people, you're gonna have an opportunity in here to put yourself in a position to sponsor people. You're gonna have an opportunity here to put yourself in a position to be sponsored. You're gonna have an opportunity here to talk and share and to do service and to do whatever. You're gonna have an opportunity here and out there in life to put yourself in a position to be humiliated, to do things that you don't feel like you're ready to do. And you're either gonna put yourself out there and do the stuff and volunteer and do this thing, even risking humiliation, sometimes getting humiliated and have stuff happen to you, but sticking to this deal. And trusting in God and focusing on Him, and you're going to get, and let me tell you something, God's going to honor that. And that's going to be part of the seventh step. And you're going to, you know something? You're going to be humbled. You're going to get hurt. You're going to be scared. It's going to be painful. You're not going to feel good about it. And somehow at the end of the day, you're going to be undisturbable. You're not going to be as disturbed as some people. And you may not understand how it happened, where it happened. It happened all through life, is going through life that way. Learning that suffering and going through bad times and going through stuff isn't that bad. As a matter of fact, it's great training ground. In the Bible, I'll just say the book of James, which is what our book comes from. What our big book comes from is the book of James. They almost call it the James Club. Chapter 1, verse 1, he says, rejoice when you go through trials, because perseverance through trials breeds endurance and strengthens you as far as faith is concerned, and makes you mature in your faith. So whatever crap you're going through now, let me tell you something, it's a blessing. I feel sorry for the guy. You know the guy who fails, who doesn't do well in AA? The guy goes through AA for 2 or 3 years and never has a problem. It's very hard for them to get long-term support. God forbid if something happens to them along the way, they just snap like that. So if you're going through financial problems, you're going through all sorts of stuff, that's not a bad thing. You may not like it. You're going to find that that's the best thing that could happen to you. So thank you very much.